Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Hour of the Time with your host here, Doyle Shamley, in Eager, Arizona, with another exciting broadcast here. But first, some announcements. If you'd like to write the Hour of the Time, you may do so by writing Hour of the Time, or HOT, H-O-T-T, P.O. Box 940, Eager, spelled E-A-G-A-R, Arizona, 85925. Again, that's Hour of the Time, P.O. Box 940, Eager, Arizona, 85925. The website, hourofthetime.com, that's hourofthetime.com. The studio number, 928-333-2942, that's 928-333-2942. And my personal email address, hourofthetime@hotmail.com, that's hourofthetime@hotmail.com. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I want you to remember we are listener-supported, and without your support, we cannot maintain our presence on the air, the internet, the satellite, and we can expand. We have some wonderful opportunities ahead of us, and we've been doing a lot of behind-the-scenes projects that are coming to fruition, a few of those of which are production of old video in the form of Super Hi-8, Mini-DV, VHS even, and converting it professionally, editing chapters, titles, menus, the whole nine yards, into professional DVDs. Now, we've just released our first set, and our goal is one a month, because we have a lot of them to do. And most of these, unless you were actually in attendance, and some of them were private speaking engagements, some of them were advanced ticket-only sales, and some of them were very large ones, 5,000 and 6,000 attendees. But this first one has been one of the most requested over the years, and it's never been released. But it got kind of a cult following through those that attended the original speaking engagement in Sedona, Arizona. Word spread quickly. We have now released that, our first one. It's on the shopping cart. Just simply go to shop or store on the website, hourofthetime.com, and then go to our shopping cart, and you'll see it there. It's right on the front page as a new released item right at the top, as well as in the DVD section. It's a 4-DVD professionally mastered set, 4-DVD box set, and you're not going to get this anywhere else, at least until the scumbag socialists out there in the computer world begin pirating us. But you're not going to get anywhere else. This is right off the masters, digitally remastered, 4-DVD set, chapters, titles, the whole nine yards, for only $25 postage paid donation. That includes postage. $25 is it for 4 DVDs in a box set. This is a wonderful deal. Now, Hot Club, of course, by entering your hot code into the shopping cart or just doing the math, what have you. But either way, Hot Club members always save more because you're continuing support, just like all the items in the entire store. Hot Club only pays $15 postage paid. That's a 4-DVD set, the Sedona series, and a box set, printed disc, the whole nine yards, $25 postage paid donation. So, I suggest you get on that, because after this introductory run, the price will go up. It's like an introductory special. That is really cheap. It doesn't give us really not much room to work with. Any mess ups in shipping or anything like that, and we've ate that set. So I would keep that in mind, and as well as all the other thousands of broadcasts and other DVD presentations, etc. That's a great way to help support us and our mission to restore a constitutional Republican form of government in this country and all our freedoms, and defend it against all enemies, foreign and domestic. So, of course, outright donations are always great, but this is our way of giving you something in return by having all these specials and audio series, etc. Now, as well as I've went ahead, and although it's not marked as a sale on the front page, we are still allowing people to get, if you go to the audio series page, you can still get, for a short time more, Mystery Babylon 2, or Rare and Secret Esoteric Teachings, either one of those sets, an MP3 format, 20 hours of broadcasting for $75 postage paid donation. Mystery Babylon 2, exactly how Bill had been putting it together. We finally got it finished. He had done it. He had the list and all that. And actually, we have a Mystery Babylon 3 coming up soon as well. And that will be the culmination of that landmark series. But Mystery Babylon 2 right now, MP3 special, $75 postage paid donation. We had to find some of the old masters, etc., based on the list and put it together and digitize it, etc. So this is a wonderful deal. That's just a few of our specials. And don't forget the conference 2007. You still have time, plenty of time actually, till August to make your arrangements for travel, work, whatever, and get your tuition in. You won't find a better deal than this anywhere on this much information under one roof, meals included, all your classroom materials included in binders, even blank notebooks, pens. So keep that in mind. The only thing that isn't included is your lodging, because everybody seems to go their own ways when they come to conferences. So we quit doing that in 98 because of the fact that some people like to camp. Some people would live in a van that they brought, or a motorhome. Some people got motels. Some people shared with other people, and then they were splitting rates on motels. And we had to have this whole set of different price structures, and it got really difficult for someone out there in the audience to understand what was their pricing structure. So we dropped the prices and just eliminated the lodging. That's up to you. If paid attendees, though, all get a full information packet. It's huge. It has maps and areas of interest, lodging, eating, everything within 200-mile radius of the conference. So we make it easy on you. I'm also available for serious people with serious questions that are paid and coming to ask me, you know, what kind of clothes do I need there or whatever, or do I need to bring this or that. Feel free to contact me, 928-333-2942, or my personal email, hourofthetime@hotmail.com. And don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, when you're listening to this broadcast, to be sure to drop an email to the providers thanking them for what they're doing. And also don't forget, this week on CMRI.TV, that's Charlie Mike Romeo India, CMRI.TV, is a very special broadcast of ours, 2 and 6 p.m. Pacific Time, Mondays and Fridays. So you have four different TV slots in the week, 2 and 6 p.m. Pacific Time, CMRI.TV, Monday and Friday. This week is a very special video showing. And what it is many people have wanted to see the memorial we built for Bill, how it was built, what went into it, why this or that went into it. So we are showing the video from that, from his graveside, etc. Last week was David Christopher from the School of Natural Healing, the preeminent school on natural healing and herbalism, the preeminent school. I mean, seriously, not just a good one. Him doing a natural herbal walk, showing you plant identification, etc. So be sure to watch that as well. This is one of our other new ventures. And keep tuned in and keep watching the website and the shopping cart, because we got a lot of stuff coming your way besides the conference and besides the TV. We have a lot of stuff coming out. Like I said, I already kind of dropped the hat on the other one. Mystery Babylon 3 is coming up, and that'll culminate in the series that Bill had originally put together, all in digital format. So, tonight is Minuteman Part 12, Ambushes. Minuteman Part 12, Ambushes. So, after this musical break, this gives you a chance to get your notebooks in line. We're going to go into that series with new material. And remember, this is another wonderful way. This is information that's need to know, because the strike is coming on North America, both foreign and domestic, for absolute socialism, and to fully entangle us in a world socialist government, collapse our economy, disrupt our infrastructure, Cold War turned to hot war, depression. This is the type of information you need to know, those of you that care about your families, your communities, your freedoms, because this information is teaching you how to be ready to defend those freedoms and rights against enemies, foreign and domestic. So tonight we're covering ambushes. And when this series is done, there'll be a special package deal in MP3 format. And that's another great way for you to donate, help the Hour of the Time. At the same time, get the information to review yourselves. And if you have a group of people that you yourself want to make copies for, your allies, your Minuteman band that you're forming to protect your area, just keep that in mind, that we are listener supported only. No corporate advertising, sponsorship, nothing. So we're free to do what needs to be done and said without conflicts, constraints, or any gag orders. So with that in mind, I would just ask that if you make 6 or 7 sets, hell, you done the work. I don't have to ship it. You did the disc for some of your allies and friends, church members, neighbors, what have you. I just ask you keep that in mind and make a donation for how many you distributed. The outright pirating kills us, because that's our only source of funds to cover the overhead. So after this musical break, be prepared to write Minuteman Part 12, Ambushes. ladies and gentlemen. Again, you're listening to The Hour of the Time with your host here, Doyle Shamley in Eager, Arizona. The website, hourofthetime.com. My personal email, hourofthetime@hotmail.com. Now, tonight, Minuteman Part 12, Ambushes. Let's look at some definitions, etc., and goals, purposes. I think you'll get a good idea of how it will be useful in stopping enemies of our constitutional republican form of government and preserving your freedoms. The ambushes have been defined, ladies and gentlemen, as basically a surprise attack upon a moving or temporarily halted enemy with the mission of destroying or capturing his forces. The surprise attack is usually from a concealed position and with a sudden concentrated fire. Maximum effect can be achieved when the ambushed force does not see the ambushing force and its area of movement is limited. Choke points, control points. The ambushing force usually has the advantage of a short field of fire and covered routes of withdrawal. So accordingly, a column of enemy troops or vehicles moving along a very narrow road with no ways to really get off at a certain point, bridges, canyons, heavily treated areas, what have you, are prime targets. And effective ambushes are generally based on intelligence and detailed planning and executed with imagination and boldness. There are opportunities, targets of opportunities that come up in field environments, and those need to be harnessed as well. But generally an ambush is pre-planned, has intelligence backing it, known routes, known times of travel, maybe even what the cargo is, the number and size. Now the purpose. Because of who we're fighting, fight fire with fire. Socialist and communist forces have generally used ambushing techniques extensively to the point of 60-70% of all their combat actions. It's an effective means, ladies and gentlemen, for you to acquire their weapons, harass and demoralize their forces, delay or block their movement of troops and supplies, destroying or capturing enemy troops and insurgents, especially government officials being escorted, officers, and undermining confidence in their forces. Many people throughout the ages have used it for this category and said it's the main intent. In fact, the foremost aim of an ambush is this category, capturing weapons and supplies. And only, in fact, in special situations, would attacks be made without the prospect of capturing weapons or supplies. Viet Cong used this extensively for those exact purposes. To give you an idea, in 1964, for instance, in Vietnam, February, for instance, two ambushes alone result in the Viet Cong capturing a total of 166 weapons, heavy weapons included. And during the previous period of those two ambushes, and in January, they had inflicted a lot of weapons damage and losses. They seized numerous amounts of American-made radios, which enabled them to monitor the government's communications network. Do I agree with the Viet Cong? No. I'm just giving you an example, and it's fresh enough in enough Americans' people's minds to realize it's a fact. It's an effective tool. Now let's look at the Viet Minh in the 50s eras against the French relief units. It was used for another one of the main purposes, locking down the movement of troops and supplies. Their customary tactic was to split their force into three groups and position them at strategic positions along the road or trail where the relief column was expected to move. The first group blocked the road while the second and third groups hid at separate places along the approach road. After the French would pass those hidden second and third groups, they encountered a roadblock. And this is a very common tactic throughout history. And then as the French got out of their vehicles to look at the blockade, figure out a way to get around it or remove it, the first and second groups attacked, while the third sealed off the rear, preventing retreat or arrival of more help or relief. And ladies and gentlemen, also if you find yourself in an ambush situation of that type, a mechanized type movement especially, forget the roadblock. Immediately space out your interval so that one explosion doesn't take out multiple people or pieces of equipment. Immediately. See, your interval should have been kept the whole time while you're moving anyway. Always. Don't get clustered up. And as soon as an ambush starts, don't get clustered up especially. And immediately, forget that roadblock, ram it, go around it, whatever it takes. But that lead vehicle is oh so important. That lead piece of equipment, maybe it's a slow-moving crane or something that's needed elsewhere. Because then it just makes the roadblock worse. Go around it. You need to get out of the ambush site. The chances of stopping and defending an ambush are nil. You need to get out of there and complete your mission to the utmost of your ability. Remember, it's mission then men. If you all get clustered up, all of you get stopped and killed, the weapons get seized, the vehicles, the equipment, what have you, you've done no good for your allies. A few of you get around the blockade, can get back to the rear and retreat, what have you, to get out of the ambush, at least you've saved some of the equipment. But always try to go in the direction you were going anyway. Because after that initial blockade, it's been rare through history that there are more blockades. But they usually always have backup on the rear. Try to continue on your path. Your direction of movement, if you will. Because that'll at least get something through to those who are in need of whatever you're moving or carrying or doing. Now another use of one of the main categories of use of ambushes is diversionary uses. They have been widely used throughout history and are to this day as a diversionary tactic. If you find yourself being surrounded, for instance, slowly by enemies, foreign or domestic, insurgents, etc., against your country, you may have to ambush a portion of the encircling enemy, diverting the attention of their security forces to defend that sector and drop the encircling operation. Ambushes can also be used to successfully divert enemies long enough for large numbers of troops and equipment to successfully cross or negotiate some path, roadway, highway, strategic area before those enemies are there. In other words, if you have an area that's the only area you can get across, you have to get across that area, what have you, ambush the enemy troops before that point with your small units, your ambushing details, and then up the way the main bodies and equipment can hurry up and get through before the enemy rolled up on them and caught them. And remember, it will be used against you as well. So you have to understand these tactics to avoid them, to be successful in getting out of those situations. Hit and run ambush tactics are another form. And that's generally used for harassment, capture, or destruction of enemy troops and equipment. They're fast strikes. In those cases, you're not so much worried about capturing or harnessing a whole bunch of surplus equipment and supplies, but it's harassment, demoralization, destruction. And then if you're absolutely successful in that lightning quick strike, the hit and run tactic, then you capture what you can. And if you have advanced intelligence of what might be in that troop movement or column of equipment or supplies or vehicles, then what you want to do is have a shopping list, basically, for the members in the ambush party, so that your repetition and you're insured you're going to get the key items out of there. For instance, if your Minuteman band defending your community, your county, is running low on first aid supplies, and you know this convoy has it in multiple vehicles, assign key items. Saline IVs, bandages, etc., and make every person memorize it, so that they know what to look for and they don't get distracted grabbing something that maybe you really didn't need, like a lug nut wrench or a spare tire. Ammunition, whatever the category is. Don't put the shopping list in writing. Because if any of the ambushing force gets captured, it's going to show one of your weak points. And they'll quit moving those supplies via those traditional means through those routes. So keep it to memory, ladies and gentlemen. Keep it simple. Now, to give you an idea, throughout history, especially since World War II, one example of this hit-and-run tactic is a minor diversion would be created on a road near a security force. Now, we're talking their security forces, the enemy, some base camp where they can dispatch people, artillery, etc., to inflict damages upon you, the force that's being invaded. Now, you need some of their supplies. You don't have unlimited supply lines, unlimited logistics, a major national power backing you, supplying endless amounts of tools and machinery and weapons and ammunition through already captured and seized and established supply lines. You're trying to keep your community safe from this outside interference. So, oftentimes, somewhere near one of their bases, in the general vicinity, burning a bus, stealing equipment from them, seemingly petty security things. And when they would get the information on this attack on their forces or near their base, they will often dispatch security forces, as they call them, to find out what's going on, defend it, go through the area. When the enemy does that and they're on their way to that diversionary site, they are ripe for an ambush because they're going to be full speed getting there. You can sometimes do it on one of their government command posts, an enemy encampment, as a decoy. Of course, they don't wipe them out instantly. The whole idea is to get them to ask for help from a much larger force. The security forces, reinforcements, and you already have your Minuteman bands set in ambush on the anticipated columns and entry areas, ready to ambush that support column. Then that is where you get your supplies, etc. The minor attack on the base was a mere diversionary tactic, a hit-and-run tactic. Oftentimes it can be used, ambushes that is, to capture enemy personnel for interrogation, to kidnap or assassinate top enemy officials and officers. Oftentimes it's been used in the past when an enemy comprised of both foreign and domestic sources, has control of a given area, and the populace is staying basically neutral in that area. The American populace, let's say, in some county, we'll break it down to make it simple for you, is basically just laying low. They're really not taking outright action against this enemy occupation, but at the same time, they're not just helping them either. They're kind of laying low because the enemies let them know, and this happens all the time, that they just mind their P's and Q's and live with the rules and keep supplying the food and farming and some labor, that they'll be left alone in the area. That's not very effective, though, for those of us fighting to reestablish our freedom and to expel that enemy. So it's often been done in the past that freedom bands can, through acquired uniforms, insignia, etc., pose as that enemy soldier, that occupying force. And then at that point, you go around and use the tactic of deception in your ambushes. And in doing so, you hit some of the local area as if the enemy had done it, and turn that populace, its fence walkers at this point, fully against the enemy that's holding the area. See how that works? It's a very simple tactic. Doesn't mean you go out and go slaughter a bunch of babies and women, but maybe dressed as enemy soldiers, seize a bunch of cattle from particular farms or sheep or chickens or supplies from local stores in that community as enemy troops, apparently, and turn that populace against the enemy troops and the holding force. So they're not just fence walkers anymore trying to keep their head in the sand. They become an effective ally. And like I say, it's been used both ways. Malaya was a particular example. They constantly, the British, getting ambushed. And they found when they stepped up the ambush tactics against the enemy, that was the only way they could fight them. And that's what you're going to have to do. Now, we're going to take a musical break. I need to get a drink of water, etc. And we're going to get into some of the tactics, historical, prevalent tactics, countermeasures, human factors, etc. And show you how these tactics can be used effectively in defending your homes, your communities, your counties, your states, your country, against an enemy insurrection force, whether that be foreign or domestic, and defend your way of life against this enemy that may even be completely sponsored, outright invasion with foreign power backing, let alone all their thousands and hundreds of thousands of agent provocateurs already in this country illegally. So let's go to a musical break, ladies and gentlemen. After that, we'll get into some of the tactics that are used. We'll be right back. All right, ladies and gentlemen, again, your host here, Doyle Shamley in Eager, Arizona, with the Hour of the Time. The website, hourofthetime.com. The studio number, 928-333-2942, and my personal email address, hourofthetime@hotmail.com. Don't forget we're listener supported, ladies and gentlemen. We have a lot of specials going on right now. Just look at the hot shop, the store, if you will. And for your donations, we can send you some very wonderful research products. And don't forget Conference 2007 coming up. You still have plenty of time to make those arrangements. Now continue on with ambushing today, Minuteman Part 12. Let's look at some tactics. The basic tactic of an ambush has to be, ladies and gentlemen, to use the smallest number of people, employing the principle of surprise and avoiding open combat with numerically superior forces. If you look back through history, let's just take a small analysis of Malaya, Korea, Philippines, Vietnam, etc. Ambushers were able to lay down a continued and effective line of fire against superior forces while maintaining their capability to disperse quickly. Being adept at dispersal and withdrawal, however, depends on optimal timing and placement of the ambushers. Concealed attacks on main supply routes were the most frequent kind of ambush used in those operations, Korea, Malaya, Philippines. To give you an idea, of 82 recorded ambushes in 1951 alone, 62 occurred along main roads, 14 against patrols, in hills and treed areas, and 6 in small villages. Urban ambushes consisted mostly of hit-and-run attacks to demoralize and seize key people and equipment, or hold up some public conveyances, and were generally executed by 3 to 5 people. In Malaya, motor transports were ambushed incessantly. Vehicles were easy targets. Since there were few available roads, they were windy, hilly. They cut through vegetation, narrow gorges, trees. And in areas where there are dense roads, you can absolutely obliterate routes to narrow the choices of the enemy forces. Generally, in Malaya, the ambushers had the tactic and advantage of concealment and close-range firing by using tree lines, gorges, narrow paths. Korea, the tactics were the same, and although many of the roads were not heavily foliaged, they had boulder outcroppings, caves, hiding places, crevices, mountain passes where the roads cut through rock are excellent places because there's no way of escape, just forward and back. In Vietnam, oftentimes the ambush drove the enemy into another trap. Frequently, automatic weapons fire, diversionary tactics would cause the enemy to run for cover, and there were the traps were laid in all forms, from explosives down to simply sharpened stakes, booby traps, etc. And oftentimes, the escape routes were already pre-positioned with various means to slow down ensuing security forces and relief when the ambushing force left. So on your predetermined escape routes, you'd want to have heavy rock strewn and main pathways that you knew is there, so you know the quick way around it, but to slow up the people who don't know the territory or terrain. Traps, pits. You get the hint. There are some certain common tactics as far as formations that are used, ladies and gentlemen. Two of the most common is the hammer and anvil, in which a main force against the enemy is placed on one side and they're struck from the other. And the L formation, with one party being in front and then the other half, the L shape, along its flank of the enemy soldiers. As the enemy approached, they were fired upon from both fronts and flanks, or side to side. There's advantages to each technique. In the L formation, being fired from the front and the side, you have the advantage in the sense that they only have one route of escape, back to where they came from. And for the ambushing party, you need to consider this in an L formation. You only need to know one route of escape, one general direction of escape. If you encircle an enemy, tactics need to change, because in an encircling ambush, you can't just openly fire every direction. You're going to be hitting your other troops as well, your friendlies. Plus, there's multiple escape routes. In the hammer and anvil concept, ladies and gentlemen, you have them on both sides. It's a very potent way as well. A disadvantage is they can go forward or backward, let's say. You're on each flank. But it's hard for a guy to turn to the east to defend himself against the ambush while he's also getting fired from the west. So you need to think about this. Another form is a V type of formation, often used, V and inverted V, in patrolling tactics, which can also be used in ambushing tactics, because it also places the enemy columns in a crossfire. And everybody has a known field of fire for themselves in the ambushing party. Very effective and safe for the ambushing party, that is. Another tactic was called the ambush and vanguard. An enemy column might be advancing through an area of thick vegetation or woods or canyons and is unable to really secure their flanks. Because of that, the enemy troops will often send out, if they have any training whatsoever, reconnaissance columns or the vanguard column. Now, their purpose was to provide point and flank security by probing for ambushing forces. However, they're also advertising their presence and exposing themselves to the danger. And one tactic to be used here, when the vanguard reached, or the advance column, an agreed upon point, and oftentimes preferably at the highest terrain point, the ambushers open fire. While a small force holds the main column back, which would be now the reinforcements for the vanguards, the equipment, etc., arms, ammunition, and equipment are secured from that vanguard lead unit, and then you quickly withdraw. You skip the main body altogether. And that's oftentimes the most effective use of a small unit. Don't take on the numerically superior forces that have the equipment right there. Hit that lead unit and get what you can, and simply stall the main body from reinforcing. To give you an idea of what ambushes inflict upon people All you have to do is simply look at the dire situation our own young men and women are in right now in the Middle East. Look how many actual deaths are involved in outright point-to-point gunfire engagements versus ambushes. And historically speaking, 55% of the casualties in Korea resulted from ambushing, 75% in Malaya, 60% in Malaya, and the Philippines. Yet the ambushers, since they were on the offensive and had some pre-planned routes of escape, specific targets, suffered relatively few casualties. In Korea, for instance, to wrap it all up, killed, wounded, captured, etc., only about 15% of the ambushers inflicted damage. And again, that's a total killed, wounded, captured, whereas they inflicted roughly 55% damage. Philippines and Malaya, only about 10% of the ambushers suffered damage, whereas they inflicted 60 to 75%. Ambush operations have proven to be an extremely effective tactic, ladies and gentlemen, because they do inflict heavy casualties on the enemy at a low risk. Now there's, of course, another category we want to cover some more, and that's the human factors and countermeasures to ambushes. Now the Viet Minh, for instance, eluded almost all French attempts to clear out their ambushing forces. Their manuals emphasize that encircling forces were never strong at all points, and that a forceful and sustained attack could open an avenue of escape. Basically, you direct the ambushing force that might be caught in a tight encirclement to concentrate all their efforts and force and fire on the weakest point of the surrounding force and fight your way out. Their manuals also advised that the ambushing force withdrawal as soon as the danger of encirclement was probable or evolving. And the French, after reviewing their operations in Vietnam, plainly observed that in spite of all their air and advanced surveillance techniques and observation, they were consistently unable to detect ambushes in advance. And they also found, as we're finding, and have found ourselves out throughout history, that about their only defense in an ambush situation was just simply to lessen the effectiveness of the ambushing party, not forestall them. A countermeasure, of course, again, is your spacing interval, your interval of march. And that doesn't mean just men marching on their LPCs. That also means even vehicles keeping a proper interval. If you stretch out a column of equipment, ladies and gentlemen, they may use this against you, and you may need to use this to defend yourselves against enemies. If you stretch out a column of equipment with 100-yard intervals between each vehicle, the small ambushing force can't cover the whole column. Also, their traps are effective only on a small portion because the others have so much interval they can quickly escape, turn around, go around, what have you. That's something you need to remember so you don't get caught all bundled up and bunched up. That is why in the Middle East the ambushes have been so effective against the U.S. troops. Watch the news clips, it's all you got to do. The most horrific damage done to us is when our troops are too concentrated. The groups are too huddled together in alleys and streets. As individuals, the vehicles too close down roadways. Thus, one attack can take out multiple people and pieces of equipment. Also, one of the key things of stretching out your columns, your interval of march, and again, whether that be equipment or dismounted, is the fact that because it can't all be covered, those who weren't hit are now a security force, a reactionary force. And another thing you may have to consider against enemy troops when you're trying to defend yourself against ambushes from enemies, or the fact that they may be used this against you, is the use of armored vehicles, artillery, etc., to repel ambushes as soon as they occur. Army advisors in Vietnam, for instance, suggested five methods of countering ambushes. And this applies to you too, ladies and gentlemen. And also know that trained troops will know these tactics, so you need to react accordingly. One, main forces must not follow consistent patterns of movement. Any one given road, etc., should be used infrequently, and the timing and size of the road or patrols varied. Also, security patrols should in advance carefully inspect any suspected ambush sites and secure them in advance. Reaction to an ambush must be fast and automatic. It must be to the stimuli because of your training and knowledge. You can't wait and come up with a plan once the fire starts. Effective communications with the base has to be maintained. The base or headquarters units, whether that be you or them, so keep in mind they are very likely be doing that if they're trained troops. If they are just enemy insurgents with less training, take advantage of the knowledge you're learning in this series and get what you need from them, demoralize them, destroy them, take their equipment, and build up. Ambushers, if it happens to you, and keep in mind it can happen either way, whether you're ambushed or you're the ambusher, but aggressive pursuit is a key. They must be pursued aggressively and not just simply be allowed to withdraw. Because anything you capture that was taken from you is good. Any enemies that have ambushed you, ladies and gentlemen, that you capture, there's intelligence, there's equipment, don't just allow them to run away while you duck. Aggressively pursue them. Any towns, holdings, villages, communities must be observed carefully, ladies and gentlemen. And they'll be doing the same thing, so don't tip your hand to them. If a trained enemy force is coming upon an area that you are safeguarding, or you're coming upon an area that the enemy has, look for telltale signs. If there is an obvious void of activity in the area, as in, they've gotten their key stuff out of there, waiting to do an ambush, don't walk into the trap. So if you're approaching enemy known small encampments and there just seems to be no activity all of a sudden, lack of troops, they're out acting as security forces waiting for you. And you need to keep that in mind. And also, like I say, don't tip your hand to the enemy by being so blatant. Make everything look normal, day to day, so they approach with less caution. Make it look like it did last time they were there. The Viet Cong used this effectively, ladies and gentlemen. We talked about signals, etc., throughout history that can be used in more urban areas, and that can just mean even just a settlement or town, community. Oftentimes, it's been used in those communities effectively by keeping, like I say, the norm, the farming, the activities, the trucking, the industry, whatever, appear to be normal. And when it was considered a normal or loyal or safe area or safer zone, when the enemy got in there, is when they struck. And we did it effectively as well against them. Australian Army research into human factors have found that in ambush countermeasures, that only about 15 to 25% of the people faced with sudden danger responded immediately with a fixed purpose or an effective activity. The majority were found, 75 to 85%, to basically be bewildered and stunned, to stand there and do nothing immediately. And so that led the Australian armies early on to actively pursue training in counter-ambush drills. So if the response is immediate to an ambush, you need to think about that, ladies and gentlemen. And again, think about it when you are the ambusher, that they may have already drilled as well. That's where your escape routes need to have ways to slow them down for that aggressive pursuit that they may take after you. Now we're going to stop there on the ambushing for tonight's segment and continue on in the next episode. And we're about to wrap this series up and announce the specials and the offers for those of you who see the need to be more proactive, because our government and forces cannot defend this country against an outright assault with millions of internal illegal agent provocateurs already within our borders and support of an enemy invading force. We're stretched too thin, ladies and gentlemen. It's been stated over and over again from the top down. It's going to be up to you, the American people, to defend your country and reestablish your freedoms and rights. If you sit back and wait for the main government military forces to come in, you are going to suffer greatly, ladies and gentlemen, with a tremendous amount of loss. Now again, the Hour of the Time can be reached at Hour of the Time or HOT, H-O-T-T, P.O. Box 940, Eager, spelled E-A-G-A-R, Arizona 85925, the studio number 928-333-2942, my personal email address, hourofthetime@hotmail.com. That's hourofthetime@hotmail.com. And our website, hourofthetime.com. That's hourofthetime.com. Don't forget our specials, our new releases, the Sedona Series DVD box set. Only a $25 donation. That's postage paid. Don't forget Conference 2007 and our thousands of other broadcasts and DVD presentations of this key research that you need, ladies and gentlemen. And in that way, you help support the Hour of the Time and our mission to reestablish a constitutional, republican form of government.